So in about 1996, I went to this person, a friend of mine and a friend of the City Club, and said we were trying to get the City Club kind of resurrected, because in the past there may be this many people, like at this table, maybe that one too. And but now, like today, we have hundreds and hundreds on the wait list, over 2,500 members. And the same person that I'm going to introduce was really the catalyst in helping this happen. He worked at Commonwealth Edison at the company at the time. And when it comes to business and charitable and civic leadership, our next speaker is second to none. He's the president of the Board of Ed, Frank Clark. Frank, thank you so much. Okay, thank you. And Frank is also going to read the questions. So, Martha, when you get those questions, if you get them up to Frank, he's going to come back up here. Give him a round of applause, Frank Clark. Frank.
I tell you what, smiling faces and friendly crowds are wonderful. That's not to suggest that I'm not used to it. It's my honor and pleasure to introduce your speaker, Dr. Janet Jackson. Dr. Jackson, I don't really need remarks to introduce you, but I guess there was a concern that I would go on too long or sort of rattle on. So to keep it short and concise, they actually gave me something to read. So to respect those that probably worked on it this morning, I'll read some of it. So, it's a pleasure to be here with all of you today to introduce our feature speaker, our CEO, Dr. Janet Jackson. As most of you know, Dr. Jackson started her career at CPS as a teacher, then served as a principal, network chief, chief education officer, and now our CEO. As president of the Chicago Board of Education, I've been inspired and impressed by Dr. Jackson's leadership. She stepped up and has owned the issues confronting us today, and it doesn't matter whether those issues go back a year or a decade. And importantly, she handles these issues, in my judgment, in a totally transparent manner. And Dr. Jackson, the students of the Chicago Public Schools have a passionate educator who is fully focused on providing a high-quality education for every single child in Chicago. Many here may know that Dr. Jackson founded, may not know that Dr. Jackson founded her first two Chicago public high schools when she was in her mid-20s, about a week or two ago. It takes vision and initiatives to say, I believe in myself and I can do better. That's the same belief and focus that have propelled her to where she is today, leading the nation's third largest school district with a strong vision for strengthening the district and improving outcomes for all students. In short, we have the leadership needed today to own and resolve the problems of today. Our students continue to academically thrive, and I cannot stress this, and I'm sure Dr. Jackson will. Our students continue to academically thrive, and we're stronger financially today than, frankly, we have been in a very long time. So on behalf of myself and the Board of Education, I would like to introduce Dr. Jackson. Oh, she needs no introduction. As she comes to the board, comes to the podium, I know we have a couple of members from the board here. Where are you? Please stand up. Okay. Kylie, Alex, they're sitting in the back table, members of the board, dedicated members of the Board of Education. Dr. Jackson, in short, really, it's just a pleasure to have this opportunity and see a room full of people who I know really want to support you, and all those cameras back there who cannot wait to hear exactly what you have to say. Thank you very much. Dr. Jackson.
Thank you. Thank you, President Clark. Also want to thank the crowd for laughing at that joke about my age. You should know that I'm keenly paying attention whenever someone does that, because it'll be the perfect signal to let me know when I'm getting old, when the laughter starts to die down. But thank you all for coming out this afternoon. I know for some of you, this is a quick turnaround from my last appearance here at City Club. But as you can imagine, the last seven months have been very eventful. And there's a lot to talk about today. So I appreciate you coming out and listening to what's really in my mind and what's going on in Chicago Public Schools. So as I stated, 7 months ago, I stepped into the role of CEO of Chicago Public Schools on the heels of a stunning report that said that Chicago Public students were leading the country in academic gains. And just to recap, because I will say this over and over again so everyone in this room can state the same, students in Chicago Public Schools learn 6 years of information and content in just 5 years, which is quite remarkable. It's remarkable because 30 years ago, we couldn't say the same in Chicago Public Schools, and it's virtually unprecedented for a district of our size with our demographics. We are now the fastest growing public school system in the country, and we see signs of progress not just on test scores, but every single place where we look, whether we are examining graduation rates, college enrollment and persistence rates, as well as our keen focus on increasing the rigor in our public high schools. This is the culmination of decades of hard work, which I had the pleasure of experiencing as a student, a teacher, as well as an administrator in the district. And I couldn't be more proud as a parent of Chicago Public School students. This is a proud moment for our city and something that I don't take lightly. I'm very grateful for the position that I'm in as the leader of this district. I'm also grateful for the fact that CPS is finally receiving the accolades that we deserve for the academic progress that our students and teachers have made. I'm also grateful for the fact that we're finally in a position where we can focus on our main work as a school system, which is educating students and not having to worry so much about the fiscal turmoil in Springfield. But we know that we need to do more in order to keep pushing ourselves to be better, and that our progress will only improve if we improve the support and the quality of schools in our most vulnerable communities, specifically the south and west side of Chicago. Just this morning, we announced a $26 million investment to help address social and emotional issues that many of our students face, as well as to continue to strengthen our special education programs. This initiative is directly linked to my focus on equity and my commitment to our students in Chicago to provide greater support for them. We know that if kids have experienced trauma or are actively dealing with trauma, or quite frankly don't know where their next meal is going to come from, it's very hard to focus and learn in a classroom setting. I've heard from teachers over and over again that they can't be all things and that they need more support. And today it gives me great honor and it's a privilege to be able to deliver on providing more support for them so they can continue to do great work for our children. Yeah. Swift action was taken because we're now on firmer financial footing, which is also a great place to be in. Now that we're on firmer footing, we're able to invest in our schools. So what does this $26 million investment mean? It means that we're going to pay for 160 full-time social workers to work in 160 high-need schools in Chicago. It also means that there will be close to 100 case managers who will be working in our schools with the highest number of students with IEPs in the district. Because I know as a former teacher and principal that those additional supports really can make all the difference. Again, budgetary stability is extremely important, which is why we provided our principals with their budgets early this year, earlier than what I can remember in recent history. And this allows our principals to select the best talent to fill our schools and to serve in our classrooms long before the summer, which was unfortunately the case for the past few years. I'm also happy to note that this is the first year where we've seen an actual increase in the amount of folks that we're hiring. We see a decline in the number of people laid off, which is fewer than 200, but we're more excited about the fact that we're filling up to 1,500 new positions in Chicago Public Schools. Again, you should clap for that. Because we know that was not the story the last few years. We're also setting aside money this year to help our under-enrolled schools. Some of our schools that have lost enrollment for a variety of reasons still need to be able to offer an array of academic programming for the students that they serve. I always say just because they're small doesn't mean that they should not be providing a rich and well-rounded education for our students. More and more as I travel throughout the city, I hear from families who are optimistic about Chicago Public Schools, which may be surprising for some of you in the room. room. But I'm here to tell you that there's good reason to be proud of Chicago Public Schools. We have the largest international baccalaureate program in the country, which I had a chance to brag about last week when I was amongst other superintendents from across the country. We also continue to add programs, proven programs that are highly sought after by our parents, such as classical, magnet, and STEM programming throughout the city. We have an array of high-quality charter schools that offer new and different approaches to learning, and we're learning from those schools and implementing some of those strategies in CPS classrooms. We also have 9 of the top 11 schools in the state and some of the most selective and highest performing selective enrollment schools in the country. And let us not forget about the most important treasure that we have in this city, which is the hundreds of great neighborhood schools like my children attend in Chicago Public Schools. But beyond that, we're doubling down on something that Mayor Emanuel and I believe is critically important. We believe that if we get students in school sooner and keep them in school longer, that we will change their trajectory. So that's why we made a down payment on our quest to have universal pre-K for 4-year-olds throughout the city, no matter what zip code you live in, no matter what your socioeconomic background is. We want to make sure that every single 4-year-old has an opportunity to start school early in Chicago. And this effort will cost a lot of money, and it won't be done overnight, but we know that quality early childhood education can make the difference for children. Some people may be skeptical about some of the reforms that we're making, but we're not. We know that we've gotten here for a number of reasons. Number one, we continue to listen and be self-reflective about what are the best practices. We know that change is hard, but as a school system, we're very courageous about starting and trying out new and different things. But we also know that we can't do that great work without investing in our most precious resources, our teachers and principals who lead our schools every day, but also the investment in the infrastructure. That's why I'm so excited about the $1 billion capital announcement that we made just last week to do quite a few things. Number one, we are investing in technological upgrades in one-to-one. We know that we live in a global society and that our students have to be able to communicate and use technology effectively in order to be successful. We're also modernizing our science labs. Our graduation rates continue to rise. We continue to increase our graduation expectations. We have to make sure that we have the facilities in place for students and teachers to do their great work. So for those who are skeptical, I ask you to look at the things that we are saying we're going to do. Look at where we are investing our money, and you will see that the city of Chicago and Chicago Public Schools is serious about betting on our children's future. We also know that we have to listen and work in collaboration with the community. Since I've been on the job, I've had several small meetings and roundtable meetings with parents and teachers and other important stakeholders. And then I had the bright idea to conduct citywide town halls throughout the neighborhoods and CPS. And, of course, the people on my team had a similar reaction that many of you have had, especially those of you who've had an opportunity to watch at least one of our board meetings. But it didn't go like that. I expected to get an earful, and I did, about what's going on in the communities, what people expect, but I was most energized by the optimism that I heard from the parents and the teachers and the community members who came out. We had thousands of people throughout the city come out and talk about their hopes and dreams for Chicago. They're very optimistic. They believe in the district. They believe in their local school leaders, and they believe in my leadership because they know, like everyone in this room, that our collective success hinges on Chicago Public Schools being successful. The most common theme that I heard from parents conducting these town halls is that they want access to quality academic programs, which is why we continue to invest in programs that we know change outcomes for students. We also heard that they want strong high schools, especially in their neighborhoods, where they don't have to compete through a selective enrollment process in order to make sure that their children have a high-quality education. This is why options like the Inglewood High School, NTA, the proposed Near West High School, and Reed Dunning are of critical importance. All total, there will be an addition of 4,000 new open enrollment seats in CPS. They also stated that they wanted us to make the process easier to navigate. And we did that with the release of GoCPS last year. And I'm happy to report that 81% of the students got one of their top choices in the first round. But we also know that there's still room to grow, and we're working to refine that process. This is all great news about our city and our students, things that I am incredibly proud of. But I won't be satisfied until we have even results throughout the city, which is why equity is a moral imperative. I started this job in January, and people said, when you're in this job, it's, you know, each year is like 7 years or dog years. And I believe that. It feels so long ago. And although this is a dream job for me, definitely I've been dealing with some issues. I've been consumed by some issues that paint a very different narrative about Chicago public schools than what I believed coming into that role and what many people believed about our district. A few things like negotiating state oversight for special education and writing some of the reforms that we made in the past that did not work for children. I've also been working to ensure that our schools are clean and holding accountable anyone and everyone who is responsible for making sure that when our teachers and students walk into the classroom, that there are conditions in place for teaching and learning. And most recently, I've been addressing the system's failure to protect our children. The point here is that these are all important issues, but more importantly, we have to find solutions to these issues and that we have to confront them in a way that we've never seen before. Put another way, leadership requires us to run to fires, not to run away from them. And I want you to know, as leader of Chicago Public Schools, that's exactly what I intend to do. But nothing that I learned in graduate school prepared me to address the information that the Chicago Tribune series highlighted about the decade-long problem of how CPS dealt with sexual abuse. But the good thing is I'm a mother, and so being a mother prepared me to do that. See, in my mind, this required more than a collection of technical solutions in order to solve a problem. And it wasn't just about catching the bad guys, which is critically important. In my mind, this required a total shift in the culture, not only in our schools and in our system, but also in this country. Yeah. There is no question that CPS fails students, that we fail students in many cases. The facts are not in dispute. To the survivors, I say at every step of the way, we should have listened to you, we should have protected you, and in some cases, we failed you. And I'm deeply sorry for that. But I also know that sorry isn't going to cut it. There are too many victims who were not able to tell their story. Too many victims who were not believed or, worse, blamed. And we can never let that happen again. The frequency of sexual abuse is difficult to pin down in this country as well as it is in our district because reporting is so uneven. But I've seen statistics that suggest that 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will experience some form of sexual abuse by the age of 18. Those numbers are staggering. Sexual harassment is rampant in the workplace, and 1 in 5 college students experience some version or form of sexual assault on campus. We've all been awakened by the Me Too movement, exposing harassment in Hollywood, the media, business, and government. But we also know that it hits really close to home when it happens in our schools. USA Today published a major expose showing how sexual predators pushed out of one particular school district or state frequently relocate to another district without any questions being asked. It's a national problem. Which is why we're asking state legislators to help us remove barriers in the state personnel codes that shield predators and allow them to move from district to district without questions being asked. I respect privacy and due process, but I also believe that the rights of the victims and the protection of the victims are of critical importance and are of primary importance. And while CPS is not alone to struggle with this issue, we know the extent of our problems thanks to the reporting of the Tribune. And I'm doing everything within my power to fix it. We have a lot of work to do because sexual abuse and sexual violence, unfortunately, has been normalized in our culture. In the past, CPS saw these as one-off events and one-off cases, and we were very proud of the way that we handled those cases. But when you see them in the totality, as it was outlined in the series, it has allowed us to connect the dots. And for that, I want to thank the journalists for doing a fantastic job and laying bare the deficiencies in our system, but more importantly, giving me as a leader of this district an opportunity to fix them. So here's what we're going to do. And you've probably heard about many of these, but I think it's important to make sure everyone in the room is aware. First, we've begun rechecking the backgrounds of every single employee in Chicago Public Schools. Every person who has access to a student, whether you are a teacher, principal, vendor, coach, volunteer, if you have the privilege and pleasure of being around our students, we have to make sure that the right people are in our schools. We also brought in an outside evaluator, Maggie Hickey, who is a former federal prosecutor and also state inspector general, who has been amazing to date. She's conducting a top-to-bottom review of all the policies and procedures that we have in the district and has already started making recommendations that we don't have time to wait to implement in order to make sure we're protecting our students. The Board of Education has asked that the CPS Inspector General take the responsibility of investigating sexual abuse complaints involving adults. This is to avoid any perceived or real conflict of interest between CPS's law department and victims. And we've also asked the Inspector General to go back and look at every case as far back as 2000 and beyond to make sure that there's not an individual still working in this district that shouldn't be. I'm also excited about the partnership that we have with our Office of Health and Wellness, led by Dr. Kenneth Fox, who is a former pediatrician and the person who knows the most about sexual abuse in Chicago Public Schools. Dr. Fox, I would like to acknowledge you. He's leading the way. And his department has already done some great things prior to this, including our sexual health curriculum, which is being implemented in many of our schools. But he's also working on a partnership with the Chicago Children's Advocacy Center, which will help link victims to the therapy that they so desperately need after an event such as this. We couldn't think of a better partner. Chicago Children's Advocacy Center has proven success. They're experts and they know what they're doing. And we're looking forward to working in collaboration with them so that we can learn fast as a district, but more importantly, so that they can support our students immediately when something happens and beyond. We also passed a new board policy requiring all employees to report any inappropriate relationships between students and staff, sometimes known as grooming. This was a major step in the right direction because we know that the relationship between adults and students is extremely important in the school, but it's also our job to make sure that they are appropriate and that students are protected at all times. And to ensure that our staff is aware of their responsibility for protecting students, we are retraining every single one of them between June 1st and the beginning of the school year. So if you see us looking a little crazy, you know what's going on. We're trying to train 40,000 people. But it's extremely important to me. I don't want any excuse for something like this to continue to happen again in our district. And for that, it's going to require a collective effort amongst every single person who's a part of this ecosystem in order to make sure our students are protected. But finally, we've created a new unit that will be reporting directly to me to show its importance, which will be called the Office of Student Protections in Title IX. This, again, was a recommendation from Maggie Hickey. And this new team will be the coordinated effort around students' response to sexual abuse. And they have a firm mandate to advocate for students. The most heartbreaking part of any of these situations is how survivors have told us that they were not listened to and that they were neglected. And they need professional support and counseling as well as an open ear when they have the courage to tell their story. So going forward, we will make sure that there is one individual, an advocate who is directly connected to this student the moment that it happens, who sees them through the investigative process, but also through the healing process, which we have learned is so critically important. This new office will also develop and administer training programs beyond the first day of school. They will also track data that will allow us to report to the Board of Education as well as the public more regularly about our efforts to stem sexual abuse and harassment in our district. And they will also have the overall responsibility of addressing any issues related to student abuse or student bullying in our district. But the thing that's most important that they will be doing, which was another area overlooked, is they will have the responsibility of investigating student-on-student cases. Unfortunately, adults are not the only perpetrators of harassment and abuse in our system. And we have to create a stronger system of support for our principals to ensure that student-on-student cases are handled appropriately. We also know that students accused of this misconduct, they require support as well. Many of themselves are victims of sexual abuse and unfortunately carrying those behaviors on into adulthood. So I take seriously this opportunity to train and raise a new generation of people who understand that some of the social and cultural norms that were okay decades ago are no longer okay in our school system and in our country. CPS, like nearly all school systems throughout this country, has not had a dedicated support system for students in these cases. And for that, I'm extremely excited about this recent addition to my cabinet. Basically, you need to know that everything is on the table as it relates to protecting students. And we will not leave the table until we have done everything within our power to protect students. People who know me know that I avoid making promises that I can't keep. But I can commit to doing everything within my power the same way I would do if I was protecting my own children. That's my commitment to the children and parents and employees of Chicago Public Schools, and that's my commitment to the people in this city. Sorry. We don't expect any credit until the work is done and the culture has changed in our district. But I want you to know that I personally won't be satisfied with anything less than the best possible school system for our students. I'm so proud to be a part of this district. I know so many wonderful educators who came up through the system, people who have moved from the classroom to administration, others who have decided to stay in the classroom or stay at the school level. These are serious people who work hard every single day and come to work to change the lives of students. Students have to remain our first priority, and as the leader, I'm committed to making sure Chicago Public Schools is not only the best school system in the country, but that is the safest school system in the country. This is not empty talk or rhetoric that you're hearing from me. Those of you who know me, you know my integrity, and you know that I will not rest on my laurels. Children are too important. I want every child in our system to have access to a high-quality education. We've made incredible progress that we should all be proud of as a city, but I won't rest until that is equally distributed throughout this city. That means we have to invest in those programs I talked about earlier in communities that need it, like STEM, IB, dual language, and others. I also want you to know where my head is as I go into the next school year. For me, for the sake of the children, for the sake of this city, the families, and the talent that we try to attract and nurture here in this city, for the businesses who we are responsible for producing the next set of workers to come and provide knowledge in your organizations, I take this commitment and this charge seriously. In January, I had to hit the ground running. I had a dual role. I had to keep the morale up and keep our strategic plan on track. And I was able to do that. But now that we've approached the end of the school year, it's given me an opportunity to take a more strategic and comprehensive approach to how the CPS is managed. CPS is no different than any other large business organization that makes the headlines when systemic failures are exposed. But I want you to know that I'm not in crisis mode. I want you to know that I won't be waiting for the next shoe to drop or wasting precious time and resources trying to figure out the next problem. I want to work to design a district that is design the district to do what it is intended to do, to educate and protect children. I'm leading my team to be much more proactive and look for opportunities as a matter of regular course to ensure that we're meeting both our instructional goals and our goals for keeping our students safe. The best way for us to do this is to do it the way that I do it. I think of every single student in Chicago Public Schools as one of my own. I don't think of them as other people's children. For every single person that works in this district, that is their mandate. They have to look into the eyes of the students in Chicago and see the same look of hope, of admiration, of respect that they have for their very own children. More than any other institution in our society, the school is the center of a community, the place where our children come to learn and understand the world outside of their homes. We must hold ourselves to the highest bar possible, not only when it comes to protecting students, but also to educating them. Thank you. Only give me the easy ones, and I'll just joke.
Nothing less than outstanding. I think we would all agree on that. All right. The first question is from David Hillier, McCormick Foundation.
court.
He wants you to talk about the role of civic education.
Thank you. Thank you, David. As you know, through the support of the McCormick Foundation, Chicago Public Schools has made civics education extremely important. It's outlined in our 3-year strategic plan for improving the quality of our schools as well as our communities. But as it relates to the topic that I covered today, one area that I didn't spend a lot of time on is the role of student voice. And through our civics education programs, we have amplified the role of student voice throughout our district and in decision making. And as we think about our awareness campaign around how we're going to improve the culture in Chicago public schools, students are going to play a critical role in this. So we're going to be looking to our student voice committees to help lead this work, to start having conversations with their peers about it, and really to be the allies in this work. Because we know in order to turn anything around, you need allies. It's not just the people that are involved. So we continue to be committed to civics education, and not just because it's now a high school graduation requirement, but because we know that we're training the next generation of leaders and that they have to know how to be actively engaged in order to get things done. So thank you for your support and thank you for that question.
The next one is from Ellen Turner. Basically, she wants to know if we could have all of our students starting earlier, 7 or 7:30. later, 7 or 7:30. Because they need more rest.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. This is like when I was a principal and you would bring all the students in. I would do a big presentation about all the expectations, and then they would ask me, do we have to wear uniform? So, but no, seriously, that's a good question. We've actually made some progress as a district. You know that we do have local control, so it is a school and local school council decision. So at the high school level, we have given high schools the opportunity to change their start time. So if that's something that you desire, if there's a particular school, I would encourage you to speak directly with the principal and the local school council in order to start that process.
My kids are off their school.
Okay. Yes. No, there's a lot of research to support it, but we're flexible in that. Obviously, there are some constraints with buses and other supports, but there is flexibility there for principals. And some of our principals have taken us up on that, and they now see higher student engagement and higher student attendance as a result. So thank you. All right.
The next question is from Wendy from Raise Your Hand, and her question is, it's great that you're hiring more social workers. She cites the ratio of 1 to 1,200, which she proposes to be our ratio, and suggests that ratio should be 1 to 250.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Wendy, for that question, and thank you for following me on Twitter today. I saw that too. And anybody else, you can do that as well. But seriously, we're incredibly proud of the investment that we've made around social workers. As I stated in my speech, I've been conducting roundtables throughout the city as well as town halls. And as you can imagine, in all of those meetings, there are proposals about different resources that are needed. But the one that continued to resonate with me was the need for social workers in our schools to work beyond the IEP requirements, because we know that a lot of our students face trauma and other things in their daily lives. So I want to make sure that we have professionals in our schools of most need to conduct groups to help us realize our goals for social emotional learning and to provide tier 2 interventions for our students who need them, but more importantly, be able to refer students to tier 3 supports when that happens. We were relying on teachers to do that, and I would like to continue to get that ratio down to closer to the national average. But I think this is a step in the right direction, and it shows the good faith effort that I'm personally trying to make in order to make sure that our students have the resources that they need in order to be successful.
The next question, John, I really can't make out your last name at all, nor can I make out most of your writing. But what I can pick out from this is, what are the most challenging obstacles to your agenda?
You know, I don't think of them as obstacles. They're all opportunities. But what the one thing that I would like people to hear today, a few things. Number one is that you don't have to worry about leadership or courage to get this job done. I possess more than enough. So that's there. What I need is time in order to get the job done, because it didn't take, 6 months in order for us to get into this position. And the ideas, the big, bold ideas that I have about improving Chicago public schools are going to take time, and it's going to take collective effort in order order for us to be successful. So nothing really shocked me. I had the pleasure of serving as the chief education officer under Forrest Claypool, who, as many of you know, was not afraid to take any punches. And that allowed me to really learn in this role. So I was very much prepared to take on this role. And nothing surprises me. The one thing that I would ask for is more support from you in order to make this district the best district in the country.
The next question is from a gentleman who has, I think, a very interesting first name. It's just unpronounceable. but you'll know who you are when I speak. And that was meant to be a joke, so I hope I didn't offend anyone unintentionally. But in any event, I guess the bottom line to your question is, why doesn't every school have a best buddy program to participate in, since we want to improve the special education system?
That's an excellent question, and I have the exact same one. So when I was principal of Westinghouse College Prep, we had a Best Buddies program, and it was one of the most phenomenal options that we offer to our students. And as a result, we have seen the expansion of Best Buddies programs throughout the city. Our sports administration office, who also handles other out-of-school time activities, is coordinating that. We just recently administered a survey, or we are about to administer a survey, asking all schools, what type of programs do you have that allow special education students and general education students to work in collaboration with one another outside of the classroom. We're also doing that in coordination with the 50th anniversary of Special Olympics, which was talked about earlier before the presentation started. And so the United Communities is another program that we're looking to expand in our schools, which is similar to Best Buddies, where it gives gen ed peers and students with disabilities an opportunity to socialize with one another. So there are so many amazing programs. I know that the CEO from the NORA Project is here today, which is another new program that's working to ensure that students have, you know, general education peers, so they feel like they're part of the school community and actually have a childhood similar to one that all of us have had. So we're not at 100% yet. We might be. I don't know until I see the survey results. But as soon as I see that, we're going to be making sure that these new programs like NORA Project, the United Communities program from the Special Olympics, are placed in those schools that don't yet have a program.
Go right ahead. Bishop Miller asked a very interesting question with an obvious answer, and the question is the union on board with the new sexual abuse and safety policies? And the short answer is, how could it not be?
I can't speak on behalf of the union. You know, I don't know that that'd be appropriate, but we've had great conversations with them about this. I don't think there's anybody that would doubt the importance of student safety. They reached out early on to see how they can support with the task force to come up with some of the ideas that we stated today. So, I think that we're all together. I should also acknowledge our leaders that are here from the faith-based community, who I had an opportunity to meet with as well as I was unpacking this and thinking about ways to address this issue. So, Reverend Martin, thank you for the invocation at the beginning, but also thank you for being a leader, somebody that's willing to step up and bring other folks to the table to help us address this issue. So, thank you.
Tom Moss asked about our criminal background checks, and essentially he's saying, and I think it's a thoughtful question, that there are people who get in trouble with early stages in their lives, mm-hmm. some point in their lives, yeah. and they get in the system. And I guess the real question is, given people, how will your background checks navigate this distinction between people who have rehabilitated mm-hmm. themselves?
Yep. All right. A few things are important to know about our background check process. It's extremely strong as I stand here today. However, because over time we've made changes and enhancements to that system, there are some employees who were hired before some of the automation that currently exists, as well as individuals who may or may not have involvement with the criminal justice system after they've been hired. CPS has a process to look at individuals' background. It's a very private process, so we're not doing this in order to expose people individually. We do have certain enumerated offenses that we do take very seriously. So if someone has been convicted of something that is listed as one of those enumerated offenses that wasn't caught earlier, they will not be allowed to stay in the system. But this is not a witch hunt. This is just another screen to make sure that we have the right people in our schools.
And The last question from Marcy. What kind of career training has been offered for students who may not be on track for college?
Yeah, a really good question, and one that I could probably do a City Club speech on all along, because it comes up a lot. You know, just to say, I remember in Chicago Public Schools when we didn't have as strong a college-going culture as we have today. And as a former high school principal and teacher, I think we moved in the right direction. But we also acknowledge that there are many of our students that want different pathways, whether that pathway is to go to a two-year college first or to go right into the world of work. And so we have been working with Thrive, as well as some of our other labor unions, as well as our career and technical education department at CPS, to make sure students are more aware of those options, but more importantly, to make sure students are proud of those options. We don't want students to think if they decide to go into a trade or a career prep program that that's somehow less than going off to college. These are, you know, as many of you know, anytime you call a contractor or some of these other specialized individuals, these are career fields that can really afford them the opportunity to take care of their families and live meaningful lives. And it's our obligation to make sure that those jobs are filled with the top talent that we have in CPS. So you should expect to hear more about that. I think we have a strong college program, but we are looking to enhance our offerings around career preparation and working with the partners who have been so eager to come to the table and work with the city as well as CPS.
Let's give them both a great round of applause. Thank you very much. Janice, hold on one second.